Hello and welcome to Faith Conversations. My name is Mel Lorenz, and I'm really glad you decided to listen today. We get the opportunity to talk to interesting people from all walks of life who have something to offer to us about the intersection of faith and real life. As you know, you can always listen to past Faith Conversations that we've had with authors and interesting people all over the world just by going to our website, thebrooknetwork.org. Today, my guest is theologian Stanley Hauerwas, who is the Gilbert T. Rowe Professor of Theological Ethics at Duke University, has written many interesting, deep, and provocative theological works, and has recently finished a memoir called Hannah's Child, a Theologian's Memoir. You say at the very end of the book that you never thought that you'd write something like Hannah's Child. Why not?
It's such an exercise in narcissism, but it proved to be true that I'm narcissistic enough to do it. So I had friends ask me to do it, and I had resisted it, and it got in my imagination. It became an obsession, and so I did it.
Well, we're glad that you did it, and I hope that our listeners will pick up a copy of Hannah's Child. You can get it through Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble. What's behind the title, Hannah's Child?
My mother was from dirt poor Mississippi, and my father was a bricklayer in Dallas, and they met and married both late, and my mother was desperate to have a child, and I learned after her death she had had a child that was stillborn, but she was an indomitable lady, and she was determined to have a child, so she had heard the story of Samuel and Hannah. And so she prayed to God that if God would give her a son, she would give that son to God, which I say was perfectly appropriate. But did she have to tell me when I was six? So I'm sure that story really set my life's direction.
Do you view this memoir as a story about your faith or about your life or about the people in your life or about God? What is it in your mind?
All of the above. They're all so intertwined for me that it's absolutely inseparable. What it means for me to be a Christian is to have my life claimed by extraordinary friends who make me more than I am. And that doesn't mean, of course, that I don't think that God has a particular claim on my life. I certainly do. But I understand it primarily mediated through the wonderful people who have made my life possible.
Well, one of the distinguishing features of your theological writings is that you emphasize that our self-definition comes in community, in the context of the church, and not just the individual Christian faith. Could you explain what you mean by that? Because it's just not in our cultural framework.
I think that in America, so often people think they have, quote, a personal relationship with God, which they go to church to have expressed. In contrast, I believe outside the church there's no salvation, which should make you think twice about what you mean by salvation. To be made a Christian is to be baptized into the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, such that you are made part of a people that is an alternative to the world. And that means that you are saved from so many of the proclivities of a world that thinks life is possible as if God does not exist. And so the church for me is absolutely necessary for any articulation of what it would mean to be saved.
Well, it's a very long journey of you coming to faith and then coming to the church, but let's start at the beginning. You grow up the son of a bricklayer. Tell us about your early years. What's most outstanding in your mind?
Work. I was brought up to work. All my family did was work. My mother, by the time I was four, she had me gardening. By the time I was six, I was raising black-eyed peas and okra to sell to the neighborhood. By the time I was 7, my father had taken me out to the job, and I was initiated into all the skills necessary to be a laborer for bricklayers, because my father was a craftsman, and you have to learn all the subsidiary skills before you start to lay brick. He didn't teach me to lay brick until I was around 16, because he didn't want me to get into the money and not go to college. I often describe the reason why I was going to college as I say I became a theologian because I couldn't get saved. We went to an evangelical Methodist church where you would go to church on Sunday morning and be baptized and confirmed, but you had to be saved on Sunday night. And I wanted to be saved, but I didn't think you should fake it. So finally, one Sunday night, we were singing I Surrender All for the 25th time, and I thought, this is going to go on all night. So I decided if God wasn't going to save me, I could dedicate my life to the Lord, and that would put God in a bind. So I did, and I was told if you were going to go into the ministry, which subsequently never happened, you had to go to college. And so I had been put on a college track. No one in my family had ever been to college. We had no idea what that was. But my father, by learning to lay brick and to lay brick every summer, that's how I paid my way through college.
You're listening to Faith Conversations. Today, my guest is Stanley Hauerwas, who is a professor of theological ethics at Duke University and has just written his memoir called Hannah's Child, a Theologian's Memoir. So, Stanley, you went to Southwestern University and from there on to Yale, and yet faith was slow in coming for you. Why was that?
Well, I had more or less given up on Christianity by the time I got to college. By reading certain books made me think that this stuff isn't true. When I was in college, I was the philosophy major at Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. And I had a wonderful teacher named John Score. And by reading philosophy with John, I realized I wasn't smart enough to be an atheist. So I went to Yale Divinity School to find out if it was true. And there, I'd always thought if I were going to be a Christian, of course, I'd be a liberal Christian. But I discovered that it was liberal theologians that had failed to oppose Hitler, but it was Karl Barth that had stood against the terrors of that regime. And I started reading Barth, and that stayed with me ever since. And I'd become, I say, probably few people need to become theologians to be a Christian, but I probably did. So I've spent my whole life reading texts that have formed me, hopefully in a way that I cannot think any other way than as a Christian and live any other way than as a Christian.
You're known for your provocative thoughts and your sometimes unconventional angle on Christian belief and your statements about certainty and doubt and so on, your views on pacifism and so on. Are those ideas forged just for you step by step through your life as you read the biblical text, as you try to figure it out in conjunction with others? And what happens when you float something and you get a lot of opposition to it?
The answer to the first question is yes. Basically, I think of Christian theology as an ongoing investigation into the reality that at the very basis of our faith is, out of all the people of the world, I've called you Israel to be my promised people. And so it is that fundamental promise to Israel, completed in the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, that means that our way of seeing the world is not the way most people see the world. So to be a Christian requires an ongoing training in learning to see all that is under the care of the God who did not have to create, but does and did, and sending us knowledge of who God is in the belly of Mary. I think people oftentimes think, well, I believe there's a God, and that God showed up in Israel and in Christ. That's the wrong way to start. The way you have to start is God is very God, very man. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So Trinity is a more determinative way of knowing who God is than the word God. So that requires you to rethink everything you thought. And as a result, you find implications that you had not anticipated. And I hope my work has exhibited that. I'm often surprised at what I think, and I'm not surprised that other people are surprised at what I think. But I think it is a way to help us as Christians come to recognize what an extraordinary thing it is to be gifted by Jesus Christ in a way that we learn to live as thankful beings in a world that refuses to acknowledge that it is God's world.
One of the things that you recount throughout your memoir, honestly and painfully, is the struggles that your first wife, Anne, had over a period of many years. Could you just encapsulate that for us and tell us how is that influential to you for your development as a person and as a Christian?
She was tragically suffering from bipolar illness. And when you live with someone who is seriously mentally ill, it creates a profound loneliness because it's very hard. One, they don't want it spread that they are mentally ill, even though it's almost impossible to deny because of the way the illness manifests itself from time to time. And that loneliness, I think part of the book is about what an extraordinary friendship I had with my son and then continue to have with my son as absolutely necessary for us both to survive. But there is, I'm not sure how to say how living with someone that was so ill shaped my life or my thought. I wrote a book once called Truthfulness and Tragedy, and people thought of it as biographical, but I thought the living with my wife was more pathos than tragic. I think what that 24 years was about was just my stubborn work ethic saying I'm not going to let this destroy us, but it came very close.
When you teach as a theologian about the problem of suffering and evil in the world, which we all know can be a merely academic question, and you reflect on the pain and struggles in your own life, you must have people ask you about that question. And how do you feel as though your life experience as well as biblical truth merge to give an answer?
The way it works is I refuse to give an answer.
I thought you were going to say that.
I think the question, why does a good God allow bad things to happen to good people, is a strikingly superficial account of life. How can you read the Psalms, which we should do every day, and not see that those who God has called to be his people recognize that suffering is part of that call oftentimes? I mean, the Psalms are full of confessions. Dear God, I have lived by the law and my enemies are destroying me. How are you letting this happen? But you are God. I take that to be the way we are trained to recognize how to go on in the face of deep adversity.
You're listening to Faith Conversations. Today, my guest is a professor of theological ethics at Duke University, a distinguished theologian, and a huge influence for so many people, Stanley Hauerwas, who has recounted some of his life in a recent book called Hannah's Child, a Theologian's Memoir, available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and so on. I have to say, Stanley, and thank you for allowing me to call you by your first name, that it really is an honor to be talking to you. It certainly is important for anybody listening who has Christian faith or who is looking for Christian faith to not shy away from the depth of it. And I think that your memoir is very accessible and very, very compelling. In 2001, Time magazine called you America's best theologian. What was your response when you heard that you were called by Time Magazine America's Best Theologian?
Well, first of all, I was called the best theologian in America, so I want to avoid that qualifier, America. Well, when the publicity person at the Divinity School at Duke came to tell me, he was very excited. My first reaction was, best is not a theological category. And I found I didn't take it very seriously. I mean, it's a nice thing to happen and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it's secular power, and I'll use it if it can help a few people take God more seriously than normally is done. But we're in this for the long haul. That kind of recognition is not what sustains the work of theology. What sustains the work of theology is faithful people living day to day, enacting gestures of kindness that will sustain life amid the cruelty of our extraordinary social malfunctions.
What would you say, Stanley, to the believing Christian today that he or she needs to have his or her eyes open to in the culture in which we live and what it has come to be in 2010? You know, part of your theology is you're a social critic or you apply biblical truth to social culture, but give us a warning. Open our eyes, if you would.
I say the project of modernity, it was to create people who believe they should have no story except the story they chose when they had no story. In America, that's called freedom. And what that results in is an extraordinarily conformist population who thinks they have to do what they want to do. And exactly what it means to be a Christian is to recognize that we do not believe we should have a story that we chose when we had no story, because we believe we were storied before we chose anything. That is, we're creatures of a good God who have been given good work to do in a world that doesn't believe there is any good work. And partly what that means is that Christians have to recover that we are Christians before we are Americans. And that means that we should have a very radical attitude toward the presumption that war is a necessary institution for survival. I mean, if you take the reaction, for example, to the building of the mosque two blocks away from the World Trade Center, I mean, Christians should never use the language that the World Trade Center site is sacred. I mean, that language of sacredness is about God. And we should recognize that those people that died at the World Trade Center, tragic as that was, they were not martyrs. They were victims. So we as Christians need to be very careful about how secular formations steal our language and then confuse us, thinking that what is being said is what we should say as Christians. So those are the kinds of things that I've tried to make articulate as part of the kind of work I do in theology.
Well, I can't believe that our time has flown by so quickly, and I feel as though we're just scratching the surface. But we're grateful for a lifetime of work. We're grateful for the many things that you've written and for writing this memoir. And if I could suggest to our listening audience, Hannah's Child is the name of this particular book, but you will benefit by reading Stanley Hauerwas's writings wherever you can find them, if not in a theological book. Google him and take a look at articles and things that he's written about Christian life and ethics, war and peace, and God and what the Christian community is all about. Stanley, thank you for talking to us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.